Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of The View from Venus. My name is Mary Churchill, and on today's episode, I am joined by co-hosts Meg Palladino and Leanne Doherty, and guest expert Vicky Baker, E. Maynard Aris, Endowed Professor of Economics and Management at Albion College in Albion, Michigan, and co-founder of Lead, Mentor, Develop. In today's episode, we'll be talking with Vicky about her advice for mid-career women in higher ed and the unique opportunities and challenges for women faculty in liberal arts colleges. So welcome, Vicky. Thank you for joining us. And Meg is going to start us off with a fun question.
Yes, welcome, Vicky. So here's my question for today. If you had a time machine, would you go back in time or into the future?
Oh, that's a really, really good question. Probably the type A person in me would say I would go into the future, but now as a mother with small kids that are growing way too fast anyway, I'm not one to wish time away. If I would go back in the past, there would probably be points in my life where I would give myself advice about, you know, it's not about you, let it roll off your back, right? Stop trying to be a people pleaser, all of those things and those societal expectations, particularly on women. So if I could go back, and I probably would maybe lean towards that because the time's going too fast with my kids, I would go back and I would have those conversations with myself, most likely.
Good answer.
I would go back. I would go back to 18 to 23 and enjoy that time more than I did, right? Like you're tortured at that time. And boy, now you're like, oh my God. Leanne, back or forward?
Absolutely forward. You know what stinks is the past. Like, because I feel like if I got to pick and choose and have these conversations with myself, great. But if I have to relive these spaces, I don't know. We got here. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I want to go. And that's new for me. That's a new kind of life feeling. But you know, when I hear my 15-year-old say, oh, the 80s sounds so cool. I'm like, do they really? Like Cold War, bad genes, you know, like really access, no internet, you know, again, all these things. I'm like, I guess so. But, you know, I think it's the nostalgia I had when I thought the 60s were cool or whatever, you know. So I feel like for me, that question, that answer has changed quite a bit.
Meg?
I'm kind of an ignorance is bliss person, so I think I would go back instead of forward. I think particularly I'd like to go back and have conversations with my mother, who died a month after I had my son, about like motherhood. Like, I feel like I'm missing a lot of conversations. Like, how did you do that? Why did you do that? What did you think about that? And so I'd love to go back and do that. And I'd love to go back and like, I don't know, maybe give myself a few pep talks or like a little bits of advice when at times when I was so naive, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I hear you. Oh, what a great question. That's like a thought-provoking one. It's going to be with me today. I can feel it. So mm-hmm. Vicky, let's move into the real, like the career questions. So your recent book, Managing Your Academic Career, A Guide to Re-envision Mid-Career, focuses on mid-career in higher ed. What are some of your top lessons for mid-career women in higher ed?
Absolutely. I really appreciated getting that question. And I just a quick little backstory that kind of inspired that, you know, this book was a follow-up to my Charting Your Path to Full, A Guide for Women Associate Professors, just really seeing a need to be much more intentional. But I teach human resources, and there's this great article that I assign in class, and the opening quote, and I want to make sure I get this right, is women are evaluated on their performance, men are evaluated on their potential. And so when I think about how can we, and I see that still very salient in the academy, right? Like women have to perform and exceed expectations with regularity to be given a seat at the table. And maybe even then it doesn't happen, but some man coming in that shows potential for being effective in these ways just seems to get airtime, right? And so having lived that myself, but then also seeing it in the academy as someone who has that org development HR background, as well as the higher ed background, bringing those ideas together. And so I was really focused on situating that in the context of how can we better equip women to manage that reality, right? I hope we can change that reality in the academy, but you also can't opt out of playing the game until that reality has changed, because we're going to be waiting a while, right? So how do you kind of in parallel be the change agent you want to see happening in the academy while trying to manage the system that currently exists? So motivated by that quote, right? I really wanted to focus in on women's experiences, helping women advance in the academy through various stages of their career. I've narrowed in on mid-career, probably not, you know, ironic given that's my life stage and career stage. So it's very personally salient to me, but some lessons are number one for women, I think, especially focus on your contribution. Once you hit mid-career, and especially with me, I'm still very much mid-career, but I hit full professor. And then you think, man, what's next? I don't have those external milestones, and I certainly don't want to be dialing it in for the next 22 to 25 years. Like, there's nothing appealing or inspiring about being in that state. So I think it becomes much more of a shift to internal looking at yourself as opposed to those external measures. And I think that's where you have that conversation with yourself of what are my values? What are my priorities? What do I want my contribution to be? When all is said and done at the end of the day, what do I want to contribute? And what does that contribution look like across the areas that I engage in, right? So how am I constantly working in service to that contribution? And I have found situating myself in that state more than not has enabled me to actually be even more productive than I was previously and to feel more fulfillment, because I am focused on a different, you know, direction. Now, I say that as a privileged white woman, full professor. So I want to make sure that I put that out there. But I have found that's more fulfilling and meaningful to me and is much more aligned with the type of person I want to be professionally, personally, and those things. So that's number one. Second, surround yourself with a strong board of advisors. Right. And, you know, we talk about developmental networks, but my colleague Laura Lunsford and I really focus on this notion of board of advisors, because they're there to support you. Right. And to be really clear about the personal directions you want to go, the professional directions you want to go. And again, that board of advisors will evolve as you evolve. Right. I could assure you that my board of advisors 5 years ago looked very different than what it is now. And again, that's all based off of your priorities, what that contribution is. That contribution evolves and matures as you evolve and mature. But kind of those two things go in parallel, right? Am I working in service to my contribution? What does that contribution look like across my roles and responsibilities? And am I surrounding myself with people who have my best interests at heart, that board of advisors who can help guide me appropriately? And then I think third, particularly for women, the importance of controlling your narrative. Right. In my work, in the charting your path book and the managing your academic career and the one-on-one coaching I do, is you need to craft your narrative. If you leave it open for interpretation, that interpretation will rarely, if ever, be in your favor. Hence the women being judged on performance, men being evaluated on their potential. So really being clear about the contribution, your board of advisors, what you want to be known for, how you're making a name for yourself and carving out your space in the academy and in your personal life, but controlling that narrative and helping the reader, right, the educated yet uninformed reader, know what you're bringing to the table, what your value add is. But I found particularly for women, they sell themselves short, or they don't, you know, they're afraid of, oh, I don't want to look like I'm bragging, because again, women get it, you know, it's such a fine line to balance. But I'm like, no, this is, you've got to control that narrative, and you've got to tell your story in the ways that are most meaningful to you. And so I would say those are my three: the contribution, strong board of advisors, and taking control of your narrative.
I love that. And I think that too often women, and it is a mid-career point, right? You know, it's like, what got you here won't get you there, you know, the whole, mm-hmm. right? But it's, if I just work harder, I will be noticed. If I just work harder, right? And so this just driving themselves into a burnout stage because they're not controlling the narrative. They're not like kind of getting ahead of it and saying, this is what I'm doing. And that lack of this discomfort around controlling your narrative, telling your story, and letting people know the great work you're doing, right? And so I do find that women just Like, it's so much easier to just work harder. It's like, no.
But it's not. And harder to what ends?
Yeah.
What are you hoping to accomplish at that point? Right. And you know, there's only so much you can give. And I'm a big fan of, especially now with the pandemic, and I felt like I had blurred boundaries before and then they become non-existent, right? Because my computer's here and I can go make a sandwich and then come, like, there's no boundaries, no separation from church and state, right? From home and work. And, you know, like, I'm just not willing to sacrifice those things anymore. And I just think it becomes really important of to what end, you know, what am I working? I just don't think it's worth it.
You know, and in higher ed too, this idea of mid-career is so ambiguous, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if is mid-career when you get tenure, if you're a traditional faculty member, is mid-career when you achieve some middle management position in administration? You know, what is it? And that mid-career could last forever, right? You know, until there's some other space. And so I think what was struck by what you said was your idea of narrative. I think for many of us, we get afraid to change our narrative too. Mm-hmm. And I think, at least in my own academic professional experience, my narrative's changed quite a bit around my definitions of what success is. What does it mean? You know, what does it really mean to be a full professor at a small liberal arts school where the criteria are really difficult if you're in a space of, you know, taking on administrative roles that maybe you weren't technically ready for, but you were placed in because you were seen as helpful. And so with that all being said, you know, you've done quite a bit of research on this, the phenomena of liberal arts colleges and women faculty in those liberal arts colleges. Could you talk a little bit about those challenges or some unique challenges or unique, I would actually argue, unique benefits of being in those spaces of taking that on? That'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm kicking off year 16 as a woman faculty member in a liberal arts college, and I was drawn to that. I earned my PhD at Penn State, and I taught in the Smale College of Business and loved it, but I taught in an amphitheater-style classroom with 450 students in a class, wearing a headset microphone, right? Scantron tests, collated by 15 different colors to make sure nobody's cheating, right? And so I was really drawn to a liberal arts college because I wanted to teach undergraduate business and I wanted to really foster those relationships with students. And so something that I see as an opportunity, but depending on your personality, maybe somebody sees this as a challenge, but I was brought in to be the management professor in my department, right? At a liberal arts college, you are often one of a few or the only person who does what you do on your campus. And so for me, I found that very empowering because they needed somebody to teach management and it was open, right? There was a management class and an HR class taught by an economist. So it was labor HR, you know, labor econ HR, not what I would think of as HR. And so I got to build the curriculum. I had autonomy over what was taught, when it was taught, how often it was taught. And so I really appreciated that. And again, I'm in a department called economics and management, and my students made me a t-shirt that says, I am the M in E&M, which I thought was badass because I am management. Like I was the M part of that whole department, right? And so I think particularly for me as an early career woman starting out, that really gave me an opportunity to highlight my skills, right? That I could deliver on developing a curriculum. I could create a buzz around those types of courses at Albion College. I could get quote unquote a following of students. I could contribute in value added ways in different disciplinary areas plus HR, right? Like I could span issues of curriculum and co-curricular, plus contribute to offices on campus, whether it was institutional advancement or admission. So all of those are really key opportunities that I see for any faculty in a liberal arts college, but particularly for women to right, really help establish that performance, right? That it's not just potential, but that we have a quantifiable, visible, tangible performance that is providing a value add across diverse stakeholder groups, right? With that though, the challenge, and it's something that I experience now, and it was a comment you made, right? Like you've been recognized as being good and therefore you're given these, you know, particularly administrative opportunities. I hesitate to call them leadership opportunities for two reasons. Number one, a title does not a leader make. And we have all worked with people who maybe have the title of dean or provost and they are not a leader, they have a title. So I always refer to those as administrative positions because leadership is about behaviors and actions. Administration is title. But number two, I have even recently found, and I'm sure this is salient across the academy for everybody, but I think women who have more than their fair share of service and invisible labor and are subjected to ideal worker norms, But leadership, as I quote them, quote unquote, leadership opportunities, where you are the face of a program, you have to build the program, you have responsibility for executing it. And yet there are people above you who can make decisions about that program that you, without you even in the room, and now you have to live with the consequences of those decisions and execute them. So to me, that's not a leadership opportunity. A leadership opportunity really is about having a seat at the table, being engaged and at the forefront of the strategic conversations, the decision-making that happens. And again, I'm sure that's not unique to liberal arts colleges, but I notice a lot of my women peers in liberal arts colleges who are promoted to these leadership opportunities are still falling victim of, yeah, I'm responsible for managing the budgets and the staff and the curricular and the programmatic execution, but yet people above me are making decisions about my program and I wasn't even given the courtesy to be in the room, right? So I've made the decision even at Alvey and I'm like, I'm not interested in your leadership opportunities if those are how they're defined. That's just not where I'm at this stage in my life. So again, a wealth of opportunities in that institutional context and particularly for women really having an opportunity to take control over something, right? And really build it. But with that said, you're still subjected to those hierarchies and those different structures in the academy that, again, you could be the face of a program, but you aren't the decision maker of the program. And that's a challenge.
And what I've found too, and I'm really lucky because the position I'm in now, I really appreciate who I'm working with and for, right, in this capacity. But folks are often shocked when I say I didn't apply for something or I didn't do this. It's just not the right match. I mean, just because there's an opportunity and folks think, and I think we get stuck in that cycle too. Well, there's this kind of stepping stone kind of promotion opportunity, but that's not really the job I want. It's not. So why would we do that? Get somebody in there that actually wants to do it, who can be successful in that space and, mm-hmm. you know, move along in that way. So I think that's fair. I also think it's fair too, like this idea that how do you get in the room is really about your own narrative too, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's a bit of self worth value putting yourself out there too, right? And being like, well, this happened, let's make sure it doesn't happen again. How are we going to make sure that doesn't happen again,
right? Exactly. 100%. Yeah. And I to add on to that, and I saw Megan muted, so I want her to jump in, but a really good friend and colleague of mine, Amy Taroski, she at her institute, and this is the perfect story to that point of, you know, maybe just because it is the next stage of your trajectory, or maybe just because you would be good at doing this doesn't mean you have to say yes to those opportunities. She at her institution keeps getting asked about taking on these roles in certain areas because you would be so good at it, right? Because you would be so good at it, right? So she comes home and tells her husband, because she's really feeling like some consternation about it, of, I don't want to be seen as not being a team player, but this isn't really where I want to be putting my time right now. I have other areas that I think I could be a greater value at. And her husband says to her, well, Amy, you could be really good at laying on the couch all day and watching TV, but you don't do that either. Just because you'd be really good at something doesn't mean you have to do it. And I think that is a particularly challenging tension for women to manage, because again, the opportunities sometimes are far and few between. Now you're getting one. And do you look ungrateful or not like a team player if you decide to pass on it for even very valid reasons, because it's not in line with your contribution? That's not where you see your greatest potential to contribute. And yet, you know, you're kind of caught in there. So that what you're saying really makes a lot of sense to me. But yeah, I love that. You know, in my head, I think, well, I could lay on the couch all day and watch TV, but I'm not maybe going to opt to do that either. So that doesn't mean I should do it because I would be good at it. So Meg, please, I saw you had unmuted. I jumped in there.
I was just going to slip in the last question. I know we only have about 5 minutes, but you've also written about women's leadership in higher ed and women administrators. And I'm wondering what's changed for women leaders and administrators in higher ed in the past 10 years.
Number one, I'm seeing some more women, right? And diverse women, which is a good thing. So I'm happy to see that. I think there's some more intentionality behind that. What I think is a shining moment for women right now, and I think we see this in the academy, but I'm also seeing this across the globe in different spheres, whether it's business, whether it's politics. Whatever happened as a result of this pandemic and the leadership styles that we needed to try to manage this pandemic lends itself to what we know about women leaders. And so I'm just pleased that in the academy, we have been able to highlight and showcase the number of effective women leaders. And again, we see, you know, leaders of world countries, right? We saw Jacinda over in New Zealand. Like, we were able, because of the pandemic in a really dark period of time, but see this bright spot of women shining because of their leadership styles, because of their leadership abilities around those interpersonal relationships, around those abilities to listen, around those democratic approaches of appreciating the need to have diverse experiences and perceptions and ideas coming to the table to help us think thoughtfully about how do we move forward in a productive, positive manner. And so, you know, in the Academy, I'm just happy to see more women, more opportunities for women leaders, more opportunities for us to either say yes or no to those opportunities. But that I think we're just really in a current state right now in the Academy, but just globally, where the abilities and approaches that traditionally women leaders display are really needed right now. And so we're able to really showcase what women can bring to the table. And that's not, you know, that's their performance. We're seeing some really stellar performances of women leaders globally. And so I'm just really pleased to see that moment happening in our history right now.
But you make me think, like, because it's so crazy, right? Like, these are the wicked problems. They are such challenging problems that we're also seeing a lot of men step away and step down, right? You know, and it is interesting that, you know, the research bears out that women often step in or are given these opportunities or allowed these opportunities when it's really, really tough. Like, it's, and so that is kind of what I'm also seeing. I think women are stepping up, but I think in the past, our leadership styles, you know, gendered leadership styles were acquired, and some of the mess we're in is because we weren't leading, right? And I think it was this hammer, non-democratic, like, just go forward. And some of the challenges we're facing are because of the lack of more democratic, inclusive styles of leadership. So it's great to hear opportunities. I do think it's a really challenging time. So
oh my God.
I know who are leading are like, oh my God.
Yeah. So, well, I know it's again, just because you would be good at it. Cause I've had many women academics that I'm coaching that are at that crossroads of I am mid-career. What's next? Trying to figure out, maybe I want to dip my toe in the waters. And I go, and I think they would be well equipped. And I think their institutions would be the better for having them in leadership roles. With that said, though, I also coach them of, be very thoughtful, because you might be able to be successful with the current environment and context, no matter how successful or capable you are, it might not enable you to really showcase what you can bring to the table. And that could be an unfortunate sticking point for you, right? So yes, your institution needs you and you can add value, but the context and the environment might not just allow you to be all that you have the potential to be because of resource constraints or the great resignation, right? There's so many like environmental factors at play that, yes, this might be the perfect time, but it might also not be the perfect time because of what's happening in the environment right now.
I love that framing. And that it's true, right? Because it's not you, it's the situation, right?
Yeah.
So we are going to wrap up. We are at time. We do a quick kind of pop-up lessons, like takeaways. I will start. I love this idea. You're kind of the first question, really controlling your narrative. And I think I love the framing of that. I coach as well. So this asking yourself at mid-career, what is the contribution I want to have either in my life, in my workplace, or in the world? And then really getting strategic, what I call strategic alignment around that contribution, your board of advisors, your narrative, like kind of, and that can change. But that, I love that. So thank you for that. Leanne.
Just this idea of kind of validating saying no. I mean, I know I always pick up on that, but that I seem to be in the circle of advisors, the one telling people to say no more and more often these days. And so it's validating to take control of that for folks. And I think that the more we can do that in a compassionate way, right? Like in a way that makes sense for folks involved, I think that'll be helpful as we move forward, maybe a different style of leadership coming to the forefront.
Meg?
Well, like Mary, I like this question of what do I want to contribute and what does that look like? And I would also like to, you know, what am I known for? And I think about what I'm known for here, which is teaching students how to use a North American toilet. And I wonder if that's really what I want to be known for at Yale, you know? Is that my contribution to the world?
Yeah, it contributed in meaningful ways to some of the key people that you're focused on. So I call that a win. That's a W.
Listen, it's all about
but I do think it's time for a brand change.
I don't know. I'm I'm really about achievable goals right now. So Meg, I feel like that's really impressive. Like if you can do that and there's like a, like 90% folks now know how to use it, like that's accessible. And I think that's an achievable goal.
I mean, I can tell you that there are measurable changes in the restrooms after I give this wonderful speech.
That's a gift to the community. That's not just benefiting the individual. The whole community should say, you know, you just need to go, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah. I think we need a trophy for that one. Mm-hmm. Okay, Vicki, any last thoughts as we wrap up?
You know, I appreciate the opportunity to engage in community with other women in the academy. I guess my concluding thought would be, we need to do more of this and foster more of these kinds of opportunities and conversations and learn from each other and push the needle. Again, like I said earlier, there are inherent challenges in the system right now that are not advantageous for women. And we need to be those change agents moving those needles forward. And yet we can't opt out of the process until that happens, right? So this need to kind of go back and forth and negotiate the process as well as managing our own narratives, I just think is really important. And I think this conversation today is, you know, one way of doing that. So I just appreciate the opportunity to engage in community with other really bright, capable women in the academy. So that's my concluding thought. Thank you all so much.
This was a blast.
Vicki, thank you so much. That was great. Listeners, as always, thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week with Bahar Ackman from the Hildreth Institute. Thank you for listening.